We left off last time with Joseph thrown in the dungeon. Poor old Job. He hadn't done anything wrong. He was falsely accused. Neither had he done anything wrong when his brothers lied and sold him into slavery. But God was still with him. God is still with us no matter what. Meanwhile, the winds of God's providence begin to blow in unusual ways. Verses 1 to 4, the butler and the baker. There's no candlestick maker. Where'd that phrase come from? The butler, the baker, candlestick maker. No candlestick maker. Butler, baker, and Joseph. And God arranged for these two people to be imprisoned, perhaps also falsely, in order to meet Joseph. God was doing something in their life, but doing something even bigger in Joseph's life in order to do something yet bigger with Pharaoh and the rest of Joseph's family. These were two important servants. It says here they were the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt. Now, he's called king of Egypt twice in verse 1 and once later. He's Pharaoh. In some countries, they call him the king, the emperor, the Caesar, whatever. He's not an elected office like a president. He had absolute power. He was considered divine and would become a god after he died. And generally, they had these dynasties. The idea of voting someone into office was unheard of back then. A man becomes Pharaoh, his son becomes the next Pharaoh. Ramses, the first, second, so forth. And yet he was a high priest of this pagan religion there in Egypt. Now, the pyramids had already been built. They were not built by the Jews. They were built hundreds of years before that. And there's still mystery about what was the purpose. But in any case, here's Pharaoh and two of his closest advisors. Verse 7 says that they were officers. So it wasn't just one did the cooking and the other one brought the food out as a butler. That was terms for high officer. And they were involved in these other things. But somehow they had offended Pharaoh, verse 2. We're not told if they're innocent or guilty, but he was offended by them and said, throw them in the jail, throw away the key. Sometimes people that have a lot of power misuse it. And they say, I'm going to prove to them who's boss around here. That sometimes happens even in a penny anyway, at a job where some guy's elevated and he has five people underneath him, but he becomes very ruthless. Well, here the Pharaoh says, throw him into prison, where Joseph was. So verses 3 and 4, into prison they go without a trial, just like Joseph had no trial. Here's a lesson, because we've just prayed for prison inmates and those that minister to them. God is doing something in them. So many have told me this, and James, you'll probably hear this sooner or later. When they were free on the outside and involved in crime, they were running from God. When they get arrested and thrown into prison, sometimes given hard time, 10 years or life without parole, then God starts doing something in them. Many of them have said they became a Christian inside, never would have outside, but when they heard that metal door clang and the judge and the lawyer saying, it's going to be a long time until you get out, they say, uh-oh, God begins to do something in their lives. God's doing something in the lives of these two people, the butler and the baker, and also Joseph. Pray for inmates, that God would do something special and convert them. And then, as Hebrews 13 says, remember those that are in prison as if you're there with them. Those that write to me, and I read a letter from one of them this afternoon, and they often are persecuted because they are Christians. They're beaten up by former gang members or whatever. Pray for them. Matthew 25 says, I was in prison and you visited me. How, Lord? If you did it to them, you did it for me. So pray for them. Okay, these two men, now they both have a dream. Verses 5 to 15, the butler first. As I said this morning, we all dream, some more than others. They're recurring dreams, they're nightmares. But God sent special dreams to these two men, curiously, on the same night, and similar dreams involving three of something. And so Joseph notices the face of the butler, verses 6 and 7. Have you ever noticed someone's face, especially you that have a husband or wife, and your spouse wakes up And you can tell from their face, they just had a dream and they're wondering, was that true? What's the meaning of that? And they'll sit there like this and you say, honey, what did you dream? Evidently, the butler had a look on his face like, I was dreaming something. And Joseph notices that. Notice someone's countenance. Here's a little lesson. Learn the spiritual art of reading a person's countenance. Is he sad? Book of Nehemiah, he was the cupbearer, kind of like this butler to the most powerful man in the world. And his countenance was down, and the king noticed that and said, why are you sad, Nehemiah? He gave him an opportunity to say something. Notice if someone's very sad or worried or afraid. You can sometimes see it on their face. My grandmother was like this. She could spot a person's countenance. I remember we were sitting on a porch once in the rocking chair, and a man walked down the street, and something about the way he was shuffling his feet and the look on his face and his hanging down like this, she said, Curto, that's a sad man. Look at his face. Look at his countenance. We need to notice that, and that can open the door of witnessing. If it's a sad countenance, say, you having a rough time, buddy? Yep. Well, you see a woman, you can see where her eyelids are maybe a little puffy. You can say, she's been crying. You ever notice that with some waitress brings you the food and she just kind of drops the food there and you can tell she's holding back the tears. Be sensitive to that. Or if they're worried or if they're happy, say, hey, you're a happy person. That can often open up a door of witnessing. So Joseph sees that and he seizes upon that. The man had just had a dream and he's curious, maybe worried about that. And so he wants to have it interpreted. What did this mean? Verse 8, he says, well, each of us has had a dream and there's no interpreter of it. Oh, some people guess what their dreams mean, but often they get very curious. You ever have that happen? Why did I have that dream? Somebody shows up in your dream you haven't seen in years, and you wonder, funny that I should dream about him. Is this a sign? Should I pray for him? Is he dreaming about me? What's this all about? And they said, well, there's nobody here to interpret for us. Perhaps they were thinking of those Egyptian magicians back in the court that would pretend to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh, but in any case, they weren't in prison now. So they were curious to know what the dreams meant, and people today are curious, even obsessive. I'll give you a little hint. You want a good conversation starter when you're with a few people. Bring up the subject of dreams. I did that once at a previous church, and about a dozen of us sitting around the table. I said, you know, I was thinking of dreams and mentioned a few in the Bible. Just like that, people started saying, you know, I had a dream the other night. Or I remember once I dreamt and something came to pass that I dreamed, and they all started talking. People are curious about this and tell stories. Often they're way off target, but again, that's a conversation starter, just like Joseph noticed this. So he rightly acknowledged that God alone knows the secrets, but curiously he says, God alone knows them. Notice this. He says, don't interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me. Well, wait a second. He's not God, but he's God's man. You remember? He had already had two special dreams from God, and he knew the meaning. And so he's realizing God's given me this gift. God alone knows, but he can tell me the dream, and God will tell me the answer. Now, if I meet someone like that, I'm going to say, yeah, sure. You know, you're Joseph and Daniel rolled into one. Glad to meet you. I'm Nebuchadnezzar. I interpret my dream. So be careful of people that think that they can discern these mysteries. But Joseph could, so he says, tell it to me. There must have been something in the tone of his voice that convinced them he really could do this. So imagine the butler and the baker nodded their head, said, well, okay, you first there. And Joseph had already interpreted dreams. And so the butler told the dream to him about this vine that had three branches, verses 9 to 11, and they blossom out. And grapes begin to grow on the vine. And he takes some of the grapes and squeezes them into a cup. And that meant something to him, being the butler. He was the cupbearer before Pharaoh. And cupbearer would be the one that would not only give him the wine, he'd taste it in case it was poisoned. pretty dangerous job. Wonder how they advertise for that job description. And so he's thinking, there's something similar about this, about me handing the cup and pressing the grapes and making wine. But he says, that's as far as I can go with this. Verses 12 and 13, Joseph interprets the dream. He said, three branches, they stand for 3 days, and then you will be exalted. This business about being on the head, there's significance in that. I imagine that butler was listening to every word. Yeah, 3 days, 3 branches, okay. And I'm going to be again hold the cup before Pharaoh. Really, I'm going to be released and exalted. Wow, I bet he was glad to hear that. Maybe he was wondering, are you sure about that? But evidently he believed it. 14 and 15, then Joseph asks him, when you're released and you go back to Pharaoh, put in a good word for me, as if to say, you were innocent and you're going to be released. I'm innocent. Put in a good word for me, too. We know what that's like in certain businesses or if you work for the state government. Hey, put in a good word for me or something like that. Now, I'm not bribing you and anything like that, but if you hear of anything, if an opportunity presents itself, please do. So Joseph asked, and the man said, okay, yeah. Notice he says, I'm a Hebrew, as if to say, I don't have anybody here. I'm still learning the language, and I'm a foreigner, and I don't have rights. Put in a good word for me. I help you, you can help me. Maybe the man said, how can I ever thank you? Joseph said, I'll tell you when you get out. Try to get me out of this place. Okay, 16 to 19, the baker's dream. 16 and 17, he thinks that he too is going to be released because he has a similar dream that involves three of something. So he's saying, hey, butler's getting out. He's going to be exalted. Maybe me too. So he tells the dream. He dreamed about three baskets, there's three again, with baked food, bread or whatever, sausages. And then he's carrying it on his head, some birds fly by and make a nest and start eating it while it's on his head. And he's saying, what in the world does that mean? Let me throw this in, it's not my notes. Dreams can be unusual sometimes, talking animals. And some people dream in color, some in black and white. Sometimes you wonder, what in the world is this? So he was curious, and so Joseph interprets it. 18 and 19, he says, yes, there'll be 3 days, just like the butler, except, I got bad news for you, buddy. 3 days, and then you're going to be executed. You'll be released, but you'll be hung. In fact, this business about the head, they're going to cut your head off and hang the carcass up for people to look at, and the birds of the air, like you dreamed, they're going to come down and start picking at your flesh. Wow, what a grisly picture. And I'm sure the baker's countenance fell. I thought I was going to get out of this place. Nope. Wonder if he said, well, what does this guy know? He's a Hebrew, but I'm sure he was saying, what if it's true? Joseph didn't ask him, put in a good word for me, because it wouldn't have worked. 20 to 23, the dreams come true. Verse 20, on the third day, just as Joseph had said, they're let out. And I imagine they said, 3 days. That Jew back there was right. 3 days. Who would have thunk it? By the way, do a Bible study sometime on 3 days. Now, of course, we know on the third day, Jesus rose. Book of Hosea says, you know, on the first day, the second day, and on the third day, the Lord will raise us up. Do a Bible study on little things like that. So they're released, and Pharaoh throws a birthday party. Stop right there, as MacArthur would say, stop right there. There's a couple of birthday parties mentioned in the Bible, King Herod, Pharaoh. Did you know our neighbors, the Jehovah's Witnesses, never have a birthday party, send birthday cards, gifts? I know because we had a man at our church back in Dallas that grew up in a Jehovah's Witness family, and I said, what was it like? He says, we never got a birthday party or Christmas presents because they don't celebrate them. And there's some people that say we shouldn't have birthday parties or gifts. Why? Because you only find pagans doing this. Well, that's not a good way of arguing. Nothing necessarily wrong about Pharaoh having a birthday party. So he released the butler and the baker. They're out of prison. They're back in the court. But what would he do with them? Verse 20, he restores the butler back to his office, just as Joseph had said. And now he's the cupbearer, and he's exalted. I bet he's glad to be back with his family, an exalted position of importance and influence. And you'd think he'd be saying, Mr. Pharaoh, it's all because of this man. You know, stand up, Joseph, and come over here and meet the boss. But he didn't do that. Verse 22, what about the other one? He executed the baker. Now, again, we don't know which one was innocent or guilty. Both innocent, both guilty. But in any case, the other one was still probably wondering, what if, you know, if Joseph predicted this, what about me? Nope. And so, like the Red Queen in the Wizard of Oz, in Alice in Wonderland, Pharaoh says, off with his head. And so they come in and they drag this poor baker out. And he's saying, no, help, help, Joseph. Pharaoh, butler, help. And they drag him off and chop his head off and hang up the body for the birds of the air to pick at, just as Joseph had said. Chapter ends, verse 23, on a very sad note. Look at this. Yet, chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, the chief baker forgot him as soon as his head was cut off. And if he had put in a good word, it would have backfired on Joseph. Think about that. If he had said, oh, king, before you execute me, what about Joseph? I bet the Pharaoh would have said, well, then execute Joseph, too. He's in on this. But he didn't say anything. But after helping out the butler, you'd think he would have said, I am eternally grateful that you'd predict me. That gave me hope. But it says here, he forgot that Joseph had helped him. Okay, here's our lessons for tonight. Somewhat theological. Number one, there's no such thing as chance. Think about it. Was it just a chance occurrence that these two men were both arrested and thrown into the same prison as Joseph? No, wasn't chance. Wasn't luck. Wasn't fate. Wasn't fortune. It happened. Now, let me explain a certain word that's sometimes said the same thing as chance. Coincidence. We'll say, well, that was a coincidence. I bumped into old Bobby the other day. Literally, coincidence means two events coincide, like two cars meet each other at an intersection. That's not necessarily saying it's luck or chance. It's just two things that happen together. Well, here are several things that happen together. Both of these men are arrested. They're both thrown into a prison. They both meet Joseph. And Joseph interprets both of their dreams. They coincided, but it wasn't chance. What was it? Providence. God was controlling all of this. There's no chance. It's God that arranged this. Has that ever happened to you, a very unusual providence? And you say, man, I could not have predicted that. You remember I told you that story that when I lived in another city, in a very big city, I was doing some studying in a library once, and then the very next day, I was on the other side, and this was a city that had 7 million people in. I was on the other side waiting for a commuter train, and I was sitting down next to a guy. We were both waiting for the train. I said, I'm going to witness to this guy. So I said, hi, you ever think about God or something like that? And he gave me the strangest look, and I started talking to him. And he looked at me and said, weren't you sitting next to me in the library yesterday? And I said, come to think of it, I was. And he looked at me and said, are you following me? I said, no, but God is. And he said, this is strange chance. And I said, no, I think God's on your trail, mister. Probably all of us can remember something that happened to us. Remember earlier about Eliezer going to get a wife for Isaac, shows up and he says, Lord, lead me to just the right woman so that if she comes up and says, can I water your camels? I'll know. And then he had no sooner stopped praying than she comes up and says, excuse me, sir, welcome. Can I water your camels? Chance? Nope. Providence. And there's more of that in our lives than we realize. But God sometimes does an unusual providence to get our attention, like this case with Joseph. And this reminds us, in these unusual cases, that God really is there protecting us and guiding us and providing for us. And as I said earlier, this is another sub-lesson about inmates. Joseph was available in their time of need. They had this dream and they were worried, what's going to happen? Are we going to be executed? Joseph was available and they went to him. And he noticed their countenance and began to ask questions. Be available for someone at work, notice his countenance, or if you hear he's going through a divorce or his son is very sick, is in the hospital, be available. Not just reach out to them, but have such a rapport with them that they might come to you like these two men came to Joseph. Be available. You might be the only Christian they know, and they might turn to you in an emergency like they turned to Joseph here. There's no such thing as chance. And if you hear about something like that, be available. That was our first lesson. Number two, dreams. We've mentioned this earlier. There are normal and special dreams. And we find examples of both of them in the Bible. We all dream. You ever wonder, why do we dream? Is there a significance? Why don't we just go to sleep? Why do we even sleep? You ever wondered about that? Why don't we just, you know, trees don't sleep. Most animals do. Why do we sleep? Of course, if I were to test you, class, would you tell me who was the first person to sleep? Adam. And then God took a rib out and made Eve. Is that why we sleep? So that, no. But whatever it is, we sleep so that our brain cells can regenerate. And sometimes that has to do with dreams. And the deepest part of sleep, we have REM, rapid eye movement. That's usually like, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's when we sleep. And we have a dream, that's probably when it is. And if you ever woken up at that time, you know, maybe a noise outside and you wake up in the middle of a dream and you go get a glass of water, go back to sleep, and then the same dream picks up again because you weren't fully awake. And then we have recurring dreams and nightmares. And these are normal dreams. And I know some people go overboard with interpreting them, saying, oh, that's an omen. But we find a couple examples in the Bible. I like the story about Gideon and the Midianites. Remember, God had took the number down to 300, and there were tens of thousands of Midianites, and Gideon was afraid, so he said, well, you go down there to the camp in the middle of the night and take your assistant Purah with you, and go just walk through the camp. And, well, okay, walks through the camp. By chance, walks by a tent where a man just woke up from a nightmare. Gideon's listening in, and the man, the other soldier with him in the tent says, what's wrong, buddy? He says, well, I just had a bad dream. Well, what was it? Gideon's listening. He says, I dreamed that there was this loaf of bread that came rolling down the hill and hit our tent and knocked it down. And the friend interpreter says, that's Gideon. We're afraid of him. He's going to come and kill us all. And Gideon said, hey, I'm afraid of them. They're more afraid of me. They're having nightmares. Lesson I'm making is, they were already afraid when they were awake. That fear got transferred to their nightmares. Dreams are often the projection of some emotional thing we're going through when we're awake. If we're afraid when we're awake, we're going to have a nightmare, likely. I remember a man that I counseled many years ago, and counseling him and his wife, and I said, well, Tom, how are you sleeping? And he says, just fine. And his wife said, that's a lie, Tom. And she looked at me and says, he has nightmares almost every night, and he wakes up screaming and says, honey, there's a man at the end of the bed, and he's going to kill me. And she has to say, calm down, Tom. And I said, Tom, is that true? He said, yeah. And I said, tell me what you're going through when you're awake. He says, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job, and someone's going to take it away, and I can't support my family. I said, well, there's your answer. You're afraid when you're asleep. Shows up in your dreams. Let's address what you're afraid of when you're awake and talk about God's promises and provisions. Some people are worried. It shows up in their dreams. Some people are happy and they have a happy dream. My mother used to talk about people that have a struggle dream and they toss and turn and they fight with the pillow when they're sleeping because when they're awake, they're going through an emotional struggle. That's about as far as we can legitimately go. Abraham was afraid in Genesis 15, and therefore he had a nightmare about some danger. But beyond that, we don't want to get into Sigmund Freud's guesses at interpreting dreams. We've heard of these. You ever see these books, 1,000 Dreams Interpreted? I recommend you get it and throw it in the garbage, because that's where it belongs. But often, dreams are simply the, like shuffling cards, it doesn't have any specific order. Something might turn up from your memory a long time ago, or just something that afternoon, or the emotions. And often, you know, doctors will say it's a rejuvenation of the brain cells, and it doesn't have any specific meaning to it. So these are normal dreams. Now, you remember when Jesus was on trial before Pilate, someone sent word from Mrs. Pilate saying she had a dream. Pilate had nothing to do with this. I don't know if that was a normal dream because she had heard about Jesus or if this was a special dream. There are special dreams, and God gave these to these two men here. He'd given dreams to Jacob and to Abraham. I wonder, when God put Adam to sleep, if he dreamed that he'd have a wife. Sometimes single people dream that they're going to get married. A girl dreams of Mr. Perfect, or at least Mr. Acceptable, and dreams about, you know, oh, and then she meets him, you're the man of my dreams. Single people sometimes dream. I wonder if Adam dreamt, and then when he met Eve, he said, just what I'd been dreaming for. But in any case, God does give special dreams that are miraculous and that do have meaning, that predict something. These kind of dreams do not happen anymore. They were given by God during the progress of redemption and revelation in Bible days, when God gave prophets and apostles and did special miracles. God might use a normal dream for us to warn us or to encourage us or something like that, but we shouldn't read too much into them. But I say this because there are self-styled prophets that say, I have the gift not only of interpreting dreams, but I get special dreams from God, and I can predict something's going to happen. Baloney. That gift ceased. You say, but what about Joseph? What about Daniel? What about these other dreams? Those were in biblical days. Go look it up in Hebrews 1. That in the Old Covenant, God was still given special revelation through dreams, visions, visits of angels. All that culminated in the coming of Jesus and the completion of the New Testament. God doesn't do those things anymore. We don't need anymore. We've got the Bible. So there are normal dreams and there are special dreams. Know the difference. Number 3, look at verse 8. God knows all secrets. God knew what these men were dreaming and the significance. He had sent the dreams. He gave Joseph the interpretation, but God knows all secrets. I was reading something today. Anybody ever heard of the great Abraham Kuyper? One hand. There's two. Okay. He was a great Dutch theologian 100-something years ago. In fact, he died in 1921. And I was reading a couple of chapters in a book recently published, translated from the Dutch, about the secrets of God. God knows our secrets, we don't know his. Interesting observation. He knows our dreams. He even knows the dreams we have forgotten. In the book of Daniel, Gary, you know this. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and he calls in the people to interpret it, and they say, what's the dream? He said, I forgot it. But tell me the dream and tell me the interpretation. They said, nobody can tell you what your dream is if you've forgotten it. We forget dreams. We forget many things. God never forgets. He knows everything, past, present, future. He knows all secrets. He knows our thoughts before we say them. He knows our thoughts better. He knows our imagination. He knows our secrets. Romans 2 says, God will judge the secrets of men's hearts by Christ Jesus. That'll preach. When you witness to someone and they say, well, I don't need God, Mike, you want to try this, kind of like a sucker punch or kicking them in the shins and say, you know, God knows your secrets. And just pause and say, you know, things that you're thinking about that nobody else knows, God knows. Now, mothers will do that with children. They can guess with mother's intuition, but mothers are not infallible. God is. Say that to somebody. Say, you know, God saw what you did once when nobody else did. God knows what you're thinking right now. That gets spooky, spiritual. God knows all secrets. Nothing is hidden from him. But conversely, we don't know God's secrets. Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to the Lord our God. Those that are revealed belong to us and our children. We may do them, but God hadn't told us all about the future, his secrets. He hadn't explained completely the Trinity, for example. So we shouldn't guess. We shouldn't try prying into unrevealed secrets. God knows all secrets, everything. Number four, God knows the future. God knew what those dreams meant because they were predicting the rise of one, the fall of the other. God knows the future as well as the secrets of the past and the present. God doesn't guess. You know, bookies and other people guess. People playing poker and other things will guess, try to psych each other out. God never guesses. He knows in advance. How? How does God know things that haven't even happened yet? He's already predestined everything that's going to come to pass. You think he doesn't know what he's predestined? Of course he knows what he's predestined. And therefore, on the basis of his predestination, he can predict and prophesy what's going to happen. So when he gave these interpretations to Joseph and gave dreams and visions to prophets in the Bible, they weren't guessing either. And it came to pass so that when it happened, people would remember God predicted that through that prophet. God does know the future. There was a theological heresy a few years ago. It's still floating around a little bit, but it's past its sell-by date. Open theism. And they had the audacity to say God doesn't know all of the future, only some. And one of their writers said, God guesses, but he's a good guesser, just like a good gambler. But another one said, but you know, sometimes God guesses wrong. That's blasphemy. God has advance omniscience. He knows everything in advance, and only he can do that. Unlike prognosticators today that pretend to be experts, you know, you see them, you know, coming.